We will listen to our Bible readings now, and first we will have the reading from Genesis 32.
Jacob wrestled at Peniel. That same night, Jacob got up, took his two wives, his two concubines, and his 11 children, and crossed the river Jabbok. After he had sent them across, he also sent across all that he owned, but he stayed behind alone. Then a man came and wrestled with him until just before daybreak. When the man saw that he was not winning the struggle, he struck Jacob on the hip, and it was thrown out of joint. The man said, "Let me go. Daylight is coming." "I won't, unless you bless me," Jacob answered. "What is your name?" the man asked. "Jacob," he answered. The man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob. You have struggled with God and with man, and you have won, so the name will be Israel." Jacob said, "Now tell me your name." But he answered, "Why do you want to know my name?" Then he blessed Jacob. Jacob said, "I have seen God face to face, and I am still alive." So he named the place Peniel. The sun rose as Jacob was leaving Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Even today, the descendants of Israel do not eat muscle which is on the hip joint, though that is produced it was on his muscle that Jacob was struck.
The New Testament reading is from the Gospel of John, chapter 4, verses 1 to 29. Jesus and the Samaritan woman. The Pharisees heard that Jesus was winning and baptizing more disciples than John. Actually, Jesus himself did not baptize anyone, only his disciples did. So when Jesus heard what was being said, he left Judea and went back to Galilee. On his way there, he had to go through Samaria. In Samaria, he came to a town named Sychar, which was not far from the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired out by the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. A Samaritan woman came to draw some water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink of water." His disciples had gone into town to buy food. The woman answered, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan. So how can you ask me for a drink?" Jews will not use the same cups and bowls that Samaritans use. Jesus answered, "If only you knew what God gives and who it is that is asking you for a drink, you would ask him, and he would give you life-giving water." "Sir," the woman said, "you haven't got a bucket, and the well is deep. Where would you get that life-giving water?" "It was our ancestor Jacob who gave us this well. He and his sons and his flocks all drank from it. You don't claim to be greater than Jacob, do you?" Jesus answered, "All those who drink this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring, which will provide him with life-giving water and give him eternal life." "Sir," the woman said, "give me that water, then I will never be thirsty again, nor will I have to come here to draw water." "Go and call your husband," Jesus told her, "and come back." "I haven't got a husband," she answered. Jesus replied, "You are right when you say that you haven't got a husband. You have been married to 5 men, and the man you live with now is not really your husband. You have told me the truth." "I see you are a prophet, sir," the woman said. "My Samaritan ancestors worshipped God on this mountain. But you Jews say that Jerusalem is the place where you should worship God. Jesus said to her, Believe me, woman, the time will come when people will not worship the Father either on this mountain or in Jerusalem. You Samaritans do not really know whom you worship. But we Jews know whom we worship, because it is from the Jews that salvation comes. But the time is coming, and is already here, when by the power of God's Spirit, people will worship the Father as he really is, offering him the true worship that he wants. God is Spirit, and only by the power of his Spirit can people worship him as he really is. The woman said to him, I know that the Messiah will come, and when he comes, he will tell us everything. Jesus answered, I am he, I who am talking to you with you. At that moment, Jesus' disciples returned, and they were greatly surprised to find him talking with a woman. But none of them said to her, What do you want? Or ask him, Why are you talking with him? Then the woman left her water jar, went back to the town, and said to her people there, Come and see the man who told me everything I have ever done. Could he be the Messiah? Amen.
Jacob was someone who deceived others. It is the meaning of his name. In Hebrew, his name means he who grabs the heel, which the word itself means deceiver. I think to just put a little bit of a picture on that, I guess you can compare it with someone who just tries to tackle someone else on the football field. And the result, of course, is always that the other person goes flat on their face. And the outcome is not always very good. And so it was with Jacob. Whoever met him, the outcome wasn't always that pretty for the person involved. Because Jacob was happy to prey on the weak. He knew what someone's weak spot was and used it. Very cleverly manipulated to get exactly what he wanted himself. And so once when Esau was coming back from an unsuccessful hunt, he managed to wrangle away the birthright from Esau. And it's always a little bit of a cute story, right? When we read it in the Old Testament, and this is what happened. And at the end of the day, or at the beginning of the day, that was actually God's plan anyway. But the truth of the matter is that when Esau came back from the unsuccessful hunt, he wasn't a little bit packish like how we come back from school after a long day or from work and think, let's see what's in the fridge to eat. He was most likely completely famished because he had not found anything on his hunt. And at that moment, at that weakest of times for Esau, Jacob said, Yeah, you can have some of the beautiful stew that I cooked here. Just give me your birthright as the eldest son. And Esau thinking, well, I'm going to either live because he's going to give me some food, or I'm not going to get any food and probably die. Of course, gave in and gave him his first birthright years ahead. That had kind of disappeared in the background a little bit. But not for Jacob and his mum. They cleverly schemed to make sure that it would be given to Jacob. And he deceived his old and blind dad. Now again, that is, you know, we have got people here in our society that prey on the weakness of the elderly. You know, we have rogue builders. We have all kinds of people on phones who try to get money out of people who perhaps do not know anymore what is what. And they try to just get money out of them. That's the kind of man Jacob was. He did it to his own dad. He was a manipulator of sorts. And he did not hang around too long to sort out his mess. But instead he ran off to his uncle, far away, in a different country. So he would not have to face the fallout of his actions. But of course, he himself was deceived as well by his uncle when he was given the wrong bride on his wedding day. And he did not react to it that well. Although he did stay to work for his uncle for many more years, so that he could actually get the woman he loved. But in the meantime, he manipulated his uncle too. He made sure that the goats and the sheep that were rightfully given to him were the strongest. He would select the strongest goats and the strongest sheep and somehow manipulate the breeding process, or however you call that, so that the sheep and the flock of his uncle became weak and sickly, and his own flock was as strong as could be. And in the end, when his uncle decided that this is not great, this nephew of mine, he is actually going to be more powerful than I am. He is now actually so rich that he has pretty much taken everything I own. When his uncle became a little bit worried about the situation, Jacob again just took off with everything he had, including the daughters and grandchildren of his uncle. And when he was trying to sell the story to his wives, why they should go there and then, immediately, without any further hanging back, he uses God's blessing as an excuse and says, "Has God not blessed me? He has done everything that is good for me." We are allowed to leave. And of course, he was allowed to leave. But it wouldn't have hurt to just allow people to say goodbye to each other. You see, Jacob deceived people in a way that wasn't very nice. And he did not want to be questioned about it. And so it's easier to just sneak away. It seems to have been one of these things that has followed his entire life. For when he comes back to the country of his father, Esau hears about his return. And he is happy to greet his brother. He himself has become a rich person, and he wants to meet him. But Jacob isn't so sure about it, and so he tries to make sure to pacify this big, wild brother of his. He sends ahead of him little groups of people with part of the flock and say, "This is a gift to you," thinking, perhaps thinking, maybe it will pacify him. Maybe he will be of goodwill to me when I give him these gifts. And if he refuses them and takes them to kill them, then at least I am still here. And so he keeps sending on little groups, little delegations, until in the end he sends his whole family across the Jabbok. But he himself stays in the camp. I find that such an interesting sentence in that text. But of course, you can send all your possession and all that you are and have ahead of you. But all that's left is you with God. And so that night, Jacob wrestles with God over a blessing. He comes face to face with God. He wrestles with God. And he demands, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Why? Why does he need that blessing? So far, he has pretty much done whatever he would like to do. He has followed his own rules, and he hasn't really taken any notice of how God would want him to live. But that blessing of God is important to him. He remembers the promise that God has made to him when he ran away from home the first time to escape Esau's wrath. But now, in front of God, before God, he has to admit who he is, as the person he wrestles with asks his name, what is your name? And he has to tell him, I am Jacob. I am the deceiver. I am the one who grabs someone else's heel. He does get his blessing. But it doesn't seem that his life, or at least his action and his attitude, changes a lot. Because when he meets Esau in the end, he still deceives him. He says to him, okay, we can share this country together. We can live here together. But in the night, he quickly takes off again with all his possessions and his family. And from what we can see, it is something that is handed on to the next generation in Jacob's family, because his sons themselves lie to him for years and years about what really happened to Joseph. His sons later on are happy to tell him that his son Joseph has died and lie about it through their teeth. That's Jacob. We also met a Samaritan woman this morning. Who was she? Well, we know that she was at the well, at Jacob's well, in the middle of the day, at the hottest time of the day. On her own, very unusual in those cultures. Women would often go to the well together to collect water. And you can still see that in Africa. You know, if there is no, or if there is a well in a village, or they have to go to the river to collect water, people go there together. It's much safer. And besides, you can also catch up on the news and chat a little bit with each other. Going there at the hottest time of the day without any company means that there is definitely something going on there. Perhaps the woman is ostracized. Perhaps people try to avoid her. We read that she has had several husbands. Maybe she wasn't of great standing in the village. But she did know about life. And she was happy to speak up about it. She wasn't going to be silent to some Jew who was meeting her there. And Jesus makes a move and asks her to give him some water. He is tired. He is thirsty. And he wants to talk to this lady. But she says, you know, you're a Jew. You shouldn't even talk to me. I'm a woman and I'm a Samaritan. You really shouldn't talk to me. But Jesus is not taken back by her worldly ways of doing. He says, I've got something else to offer you. I've got living water to offer you. But the woman says, you know, you've got nothing to draw it with. She isn't that impressed. He may have something to offer her, but there is no way he can actually get it to her. And there are a whole lot of people these days who, when Jesus offers them something, they turn around and say, you know what? It doesn't really have any drawing power to me whatsoever. But when Jesus presses on and tells her that this is something not just for now, but for eternity, she still doesn't get it. And she perceives it as something that would make her life now, here and now, easy. Jesus doesn't give up, though. He keeps pressing on. And he asks her about her life, about where she actually is in the here and now. He offers her to come clean about her life. But she isn't going to have it. She's ducking the issue. Not quite lying, but also not quite telling the truth. And when Jesus shows his authority and says, no, no, I actually can see where you're at. I do know about the kind of life you're living. The woman is still not done. She is still playing religious games. She's trying to pacify Jesus with flattery. I can see you are a prophet with a little bit of theological knowledge. You Jews, we Samaritans. But in the end, Jesus strikes her on the side and tells her, that's what you're talking about. That's what you're ducking and diving about stands here in front of you. I am he. I am the one. Now the choice is yours. And once the woman has come face to face with that truth, with that knowledge, she goes and she tells all the others in the village. Now, that cannot have been such an easy chore for her to do. If she was someone who was shunned and with whom the rest of the village wasn't really hanging out with, she went and told them anyway. And because of her, the whole village gets to know Jesus. Two people, two stories, connected perhaps only by the one well. Two different encounters with God. Two people having to face up who they are and what they are, to receive a blessing and to recognize the blessing. Jesus invites us to his table. He invites us to have an encounter with him, to come face to face with God. How are we coming here? What are we doing here? What does this actually mean to us? Is it just a game? Is it part of the religious ducking and diving that our life sometimes is? Are we trying to manipulate situations, people, God? Is our life a deceiving, a manipulation, a game that we play with God? And the words of God are always as much for the preacher as for the congregation. Or is this a chance for us to come clean before God, to admit to Him and before Him who and what we are, in all honesty, in a place where our masks can come off, in a place where we can confess who we are and that we need Him to forgive us, to love us, to make something of us, that we need Him in order for others to be blessed through us. How do we come before God? Are we here in all the nakedness of our existence, coming before God to be blessed and renewed? Are we here just as we are, claiming His promises for our lives, the promise of His forgiveness and of His love and of resurrection life through His Son, Jesus Christ? It is only when we come and admit who we truly are that we will be able to truly recognize Him and to be blessed by Him. It is only then and only there that we in turn can be used by Him to be a blessing to others.